Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I went into the room over here that we go in just before services, have our prayer. I looked out before I went in. I thought, well, I wonder why we're low today. It's Mother's Day. I come back out, the place about filled up. So thankful for those who have come in to be with us today. I want to remind everybody, as has been announced, about next Sunday. This is our annual Bring a Friend Sunday. Of course, always matches up with our potluck Sunday. But everyone's welcome to come to that. And we have invitations out in the foyer. And I encourage you to pick one up and hand it to someone, or you can mail these. Also, the meat has been prepared by a couple of men here in our congregation. So all the meat will be there. But bring all the side dishes and we'll be ready to go. So we hope for a good attendance next week. Our passage is taken this morning from Matthew 17, as read a few moments ago. It's the very last paragraph in Matthew 17. A man was walking through the mall with his family, and he stopped at one of these machines, you know, where you get your weight, and then it tells you something about yourself. So he did that, and has a big smile on his face, and he read it, and it said, you know, you have a good sense of humor. You're a good-looking guy. People like to be around you. You're very intelligent. So he handed it to his wife and said, what do you think about that? She looked at it and said, well, I see they got your weight wrong, too. Now, you guys, be real careful today. Remember, it's Mama's Day. Be good to them women. Personal assessment. What is our personal assessment? What is our assessment of Jesus Christ? I think a passage like we have today is helpful. It's one of those passages, again, that relates a miracle that Jesus worked in his ministry. For those who haven't been with us the past few Sundays, we've been preaching about the miracles in the life of Christ. I've preached many sermons on these miracles, many series in the past, and I probably did and probably just forgot, but I don't remember preaching a lesson just on this one miracle. And of all the lessons that I've heard, I don't think I hear many lessons on this miracle. And it's kind of a strange little miracle, isn't it? Especially there where it is found, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. It was read to us just a few moments ago where Jesus tells Peter to go cast his hook into the sea. You'll get a fish, and when you get a fish, you open its mouth, and there'll be a coin. And you take that coin, you pay the taxes with it. That's strange that Jesus would do things that way. All of us who are believers in Jesus and his divinity know that he could do something like that, but why would he choose to do it like that? I think it's the only mention that we have in the New Testament of fishing with a hook. You know, most of the time the Bible talks about these fishermen that follow Jesus, and they're commercial fishermen. And they go out in the boat and they cast their nets. And the purpose of it, of course, is a large haul. That's how you make your living. So we don't read much about going fishing the way most of us go fishing. Cast your hook, he says, into the sea. That's different too, isn't it? There's a lot of fish stories in the Bible. I bet some of you have told some good fish stories. Maybe not entirely accurate, but when I preach about, you know, these fish stories, I always like to talk about the time that I was in the boat on Lake Texoma with two other preachers, and the fish were jumping in the boat. That's no lie. They were. That they were on the run, and they were being chased, I guess, by stripers. These big shad, and they were just a-jumping, and we were right in the middle of it, and they were just jumping in the boat. So I don't think it had anything to do with us, you know, being preachers and God providing, but I like to think that it did. Fish stories. You can go all the way back to the Old Testament with Jonah. And I've told all of you before, you know, my kids always used to say, when I asked them, what do you want me to preach on, they'd say, preach on Jonah. So I can't preach on Jonah every Sunday, you know, but it does make a good story. And you go back, and I think literally it's the sea monster sea monster that God created for that occasion. Then you turn over to the New Testament and you got, you know, the multitude that is fed with just a few loaves and a few fishes. They were all satisfied. And what was left over? And then you got Peter when he's out fishing with his companions and they don't catch anything, even though they fished all the night. And Jesus goes back out there and try again, and they bring in a boatload of fish. And then you got the post-resurrection fish story. Remember how the disciples were on the sea? Jesus is on the beach there, and he's already got a fire started. And they hadn't caught anything, and Jesus said, let it out again on the right side. And this is sort of an odd situation, too, because it tells you the exact number of fish that they caught. 153 large fish they caught. But then you have this little story, and too, it kind of stands alone and its uniqueness. Another thing about it, it's only recorded by Matthew. A lot of these miracles that we read, particularly the ones where the multitudes are fed with just a little bit, they're recorded by all the gospel writers. Matthew is the only one that records this. The coin is used to pay taxes. Matthew was a tax collector. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but again, that's an interesting comparison or coincidence that we find here concerning this story. We think about the tax that is to be paid. You have to go back all the way to the Old Testament to get that. And I want to do that just for a moment and read this passage. It's in Exodus. So if you have your Old Testaments available, that's fine. You can turn to it, not just listen to what we read here. This is from Exodus in the 30th chapter. And it has to do with the tax that is being paid by Jesus on his behalf and on Peter's behalf. Now listen to what he says. This is what everyone who is numbered shall give. Half a shekel, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. Half a shekel is a contribution to the Lord. Everyone who is numbered from 20 years old and over shall give the contribution to the Lord. The rich shall not pay more, and the poor shall not pay less than half a shekel. When you give the contribution to the Lord to make atonement for yourself. And you shall take the atonement money from the sons of Israel, and you shall give it for the service of the tent of meeting, and it may be a memorial for the sons of Israel before the Lord to make atonement for yourself. That's the text, and that's the tax that is being brought to our attention in Matthew 17. There is some confusion, I think, about this, but I think some of the things that are said here make some things very clear about this tax. First of all, it is to be taken as a contribution to the Lord for the service of the tabernacle, later, of course, for the temple. And so there was a lot of expense in running this house of worship. And this tax was to see that that was paid for. You know, just a few moments ago, we took the Lord's Supper, and as Pete was directing us, he made it clear, as often we do, that we're going to take up a contribution. But the contribution is not a part of the Lord's Supper. Contribution is something separate that we do. And those who are called upon to contribute are those who are of the New Israel. In this case, in the Old Testament, was the Old Israel. None of the Gentile nations around them were responsible for the service in the tabernacle. Only Israel. And so it was taken among them. And so the contribution that we took today on the first day of the week, that is for those of us who are members of the Lord's church to give and to support the work of the church. And so this was a very specific tax that was being taken for a very specific reason. Another thing that is made clear, everybody that was of age, 20 years old and older, was to pay the same thing. Doesn't matter how wealthy they were or how poor they were to pay the same thing, the half shekel. Which wasn't much as far as money goes, but it was a token of what they owed the Lord, you see. Of their gratitude and thankfulness to the Lord. Everybody needs the same atonement. It's interesting here that it's called atonement money. Everybody needs the same atonement. Doesn't matter how many things you have. Doesn't matter how many things you don't have, how much money you make or don't make, everybody needs the same atonement. The Bible says all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Everybody needs to come to the cross. Doesn't matter about the color of skin, doesn't matter about your education. Every one of us have a weakness. Every one of us have a sin problem. Everybody needs to come to the foot of the cross. And until we do, we cannot find that forgiveness. I think there's an interesting parallel here that's being made with what the Lord did for us on the cross. They were thankful for God's rescue out of Egypt. We are thankful for the rescue that God provides for us out of our sin. What a wonderful thing God has done. I think sometimes there's some confusion because some of the translations, I think especially the King James Version of the Bible here says tribute. And the reason there's confusion about that, because you remember there was a question on another occasion that was put to Jesus. And they said, does your master think it's okay to pay tribute to Caesar? That was a tax that was given to the local government, which was the Roman Empire that Judea was under at that time. And you remember what he said. You know, given to Caesar the things that are due Caesar, and to God the things that are due God. But this isn't that kind of tax. This is a religious tax. And so I like the way that it's put, and particularly in this verse, or in this version that I'm reading, where he leaves out the word tribute. He's not talking about that at all. He's talking about something entirely different. You'll notice the context of this passage. I said a few moments ago, it seems like this is one of the miracles that in our preaching and teaching we don't emphasize, and just one of the stories that we don't talk about too much. And I think one reason of that, so it kind of gets lost in the mix. You know, when you're reading a chapter that has something that's very familiar to you and one of the greatest stories in the Bible, you kind of read over everything else and emphasize that. Well, Matthew 17 is one of those chapters because it starts off with a story about the transfiguration. And so Jesus had been there recently. He had left the area of Judea. He had left the area of Galilee. He had gone further than he had ever gone in his ministry. Went up to Tyre and Sidon, then he went over to the east to Mount Hermon. And Mount Hermon was over 9,000 feet. And Mount Hermon, there was a transfiguration. Peter, James, and John, Moses, and Elijah. One of the great stories of the Bible. And then you remember he comes down from the mountain, and the disciples that had been left behind were unable to cast out that demon. And Jesus said, "Oh, ye of little faith." And he cast him out. And after Jesus did that, he talked to his disciples about where he was going and what he was going to do. He said, "I'm going up to Jerusalem. I'm going to be betrayed by Judas, of course. They're going to kill me. And then on the third day, I'm going to rise again." So you got all this going on in chapter 17, and then right at the end of chapter 17, you got this little story. And it kind of fits in, though, with the context. Because if Jesus and all the apostles had been out of town, and they had been, they hadn't been given the opportunity to pay this religious tax. And so as soon as they come home, and guess where they come home to? Galilee, but not only Galilee, but Capernaum. And Capernaum is where Peter lived. And so Jesus often used that place as his headquarters. So he comes in with Peter. Now, where the other disciples were at this time, I don't know. The Bible doesn't mention them right now. But they'd been on a long trip and they'd come home, so maybe they were out taking rest or taking care of some other duties that had been left undone. Well, Jesus goes home with Peter and the tax collectors. Now, don't confuse that with the publicans. This is not the same group. They're not collecting a tax for the government. They're collecting the tax for the temple. And so they come to Jesus and they say to Peter, "Doesn't your master pay this tax?" Now some people think by this time the tax had become voluntary, a voluntary assessment. And it was a privilege to give and to support the temple. And all Jews wanted to do that. And so has he taken advantage of this opportunity, this privilege, to pay that which he needs to pay? when it was first initiated, back where we read in Exodus 30, it seems to have been a thing that took place with the numbering of the children of Israel. And then it became an annual thing. And then it became a thing that was voluntary to give to the temple and to support it. And then after the destruction of the temple, guess what? Isn't this true always with taxes? They find another use for it. You know, we're going to tax until we build this road. But after we build the road, the tax don't go away, right? No, they're still, they'll use it for something else. So the Roman government stepped in when the temple was destroyed in AD 70, and they said, we're taking over this tax, and now it's going to go to Rome. But at this time, when Jesus lived, it was still going to the temple. It was something I think that Peter automatically would say, well, yes, my teacher will pay that. And that's what he does. You know, Peter was one who often spoke instantly and sometimes without thinking. On this occasion, he does the same thing. He says, yes, the master pays that. Well, Jesus uses his opportunity to do two things. Number one, teach a great lesson about who he is. And number two, of course, he demonstrates his power. Go out to the sea. Now, Capernaum, if you look on your map, it was right by the sea. He said, go over to the sea and cast a hook into the sea, and a fish will come up, and it will bite that hook, and inside the mouth of that fish, you'll find this shekel, and you pay the tax with that. Can you put all that together? Can you imagine the odds of something like that taking place? First of all, somebody had to lose the exact amount in the Sea of Galilee. And you can see this coin, you know, just falling through the water and flickering and it's shiny and a fish comes up and grabs it. I can imagine that taking place. But then to say, I don't want you to take a net where your chances will increase, you know, that's what he was used to doing. I want you to take a hook, solitary hook, and throw it into the sea. And this fish is going to come up and bite it. It's going to be the very fish, of all the Sea of Galilee, it's going to be the very fish that swallowed the coin, and you're going to catch him, and you're going to get that piece of money. And we're going to pay the taxes with that. Why do it that way? Oftentimes, God does things in Scripture, you know, from the very beginning in the Old Testament all the way through, where he says, go ahead, put my back against the wall, against all odds, and let's see what happens. And this is a thing that we need to remember. God is always in control. And we go through times in our life when we think he's not either. And we look around in the world and we see all the evil and all the bad stuff taking place, and we see the innocent suffer, and we think, if God's in control, where is he? And God is saying, listen to me. I do things in my own way and my own time. But in the end, my purpose will be accomplished. No matter what you're going through in life, and no matter how much it seems that the odds are against the world, and good is not going to prevail, and when you look at your own personal life, and you've got, you know, you've got this going wrong on Monday, and you've got something else going wrong on Wednesday, and you got something that happens on Thursday that perhaps it was your fault, maybe it was somebody else's fault, and you think, I'm not going to make it through a week. Even when all odds are against you, God says, trust me. I can pull that one out of the water. Right? Go down, put in a hook. Let me show you something. We're going to pay with that. It's just an odd miracle, an odd way of doing things, but God is demonstrating his power. Remember the purpose of miracles. All the miracles in the Bible, all the miracles that Jesus worked, all the miracles that worked by the apostles, they were done to prove that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and that the word we hold in our hands this morning is the word of God. It wasn't done just for curiosity. It wasn't done for entertainment. It was done for a purpose. Now, he could have said, right? He could have said, you're a fisherman. Get your nets out, get your boat out, go out there and catch enough fish that you can sell and get the money that's needed to pay the taxes. He could have. And it would have been done. No doubt. But he didn't do it that way. He took extra measure to go another route so that Peter could get a lesson out of it about what God can do, not what he can do. All through life, sometimes we go through life, work. Look what I can do, what I can accomplish, what I can achieve. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a person using what God has given them to achieve things. May God bless you in that. But we need to always understand there's things that God can do that we can't even come close to doing that we need. And we need to rely on Him and His power and His grace and His mercy. And I encourage you today to do that. When the odds are against you, you're not going to be able to make it without God. But even though everything be against you, if God is with you, you're going to be able to pull it out. Stay with Him on this. Now, it's important to remember that when we say all of that, and always have to kind of back up a minute and say something else to make sure that people's got their minds right and they're not thinking wrong on this. It doesn't mean everything in your life is going to turn out perfectly because God is with you. It doesn't mean you're not going to get sick, and it doesn't mean you're not going to die. And it doesn't mean you're not going to be persecuted. What it means that God is with you. He's going to see you through that, and He has provided. Remember this. It's not all about you. It's not all about me, and it's not all about this life. It's about the resurrection. A lot of people in first century times that were faithful, very faithful to God, gave their lives. They were martyrs. But God was with them, and God took care of them. And I would rather be in their shoes than in the shoes of the one that took their lives. I'm just saying. Judgment Day is coming. God makes everything right. It's a little miracle, but it's a big miracle because of the way that He did it and the great lessons that are taught in it. Well, what's going on here? What's He saying? First of all, he's telling us that Jesus knows everything. Right? How could you do this without knowing all of this? How could He know that He went down just at the right part of the Sea of Galilee, threw in the hook at the right place, and the right fish would come up, had the coin in His mouth? He knows. And on top of that, Peter has to be come running back to the house. Hey, it happened just like you said it would happen. But guess who speaks first? Jesus does. Yeah. Jesus speaks first to him when he comes into the house and talks to him about this. What do you think, Peter? In a monarchy where you have a king and his family, you think they owe any tax? You see, this is what he's talking about. If you have a king that is in a monarchy and he rules over that kingdom, he doesn't take tax from his own sons and daughters. The rest of the people in the kingdom, they support his family. And then he says this, then the sons are free, right? Now, notice it's in the plural in your Bible. Then the sons are free. It's in the plural because he's staying with the illustration. He's imagining a monarch or a king that's got several children in his family. But who's he really talking about? He's really talking about himself. I'm the son of God and this monarchy. You understand? The temple is my house. I don't owe anything. I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. I'm the Lord of the temple. I'm the Lord of, as I just demonstrated, all creation. I don't owe anything. You're telling them I do pay? Now, Peter, you need to pay. Like every good Jew, every faithful Jew, for the upkeep of the temple and the services, you need to voluntarily give this tax. But I don't owe anything. I don't believe that he ever paid it in his ministry. I don't. Because I think if he had ever paid it, he's saying then we're on equal terms. But Jesus is not on equal terms. It's one of the great lessons that he came to bring the human race, that he is different. We're sons of God. He is the Son of God. I don't pay it. I don't pay it because I'm free. It's the point that Jesus is getting at here. But he knows, doesn't he? He knows everything. You know what Peter had been asked? He knew where the fish was. He knew where the coin was. And this is something that we have to come to grips with in our life. There is a charge that's leveled against the church all the time. I've heard it since I began preaching. I heard it before I began preaching. And I hear it all the time today, and that's hypocrisy. And I hear it from people outside the church who say, I'm not going to get involved in religion. I'm not going to get involved in that church because I know too many people that go up there and there's too many hypocrites up there. And all of religion is a hypocrisy. I don't do that. Okay. And then I hear even members of the church try to justify why they're no more involved in what they're involved in. They'll say, well, because there's hypocrites in the church. Really? Is this really a big flash to us that there's people that proclaim sincerity to God but are not sincere? That there's people who preach you live one way and they do something else? Do you think that's really new to your mind? That's been going on since the beginning of time. And it's just one of those things that God says, well, really, this is a test for you, isn't it? Are you going to be loyal to me when nobody else is? It's one of those things we need to overcome, and I'll tell you something else. It's one of those things that we need to shut up about. And we need to get our lives right with God. That's where it rests. Sincerity. Yeah, we all need to be sincere. Yeah, we all need to do the right thing all the time. Do you? I don't. I don't do the right thing all the time. I pray to God for forgiveness when I don't and try to do better, don't you? That's the mark of the Christian life. We try to do that. But Jesus knows everything. He knows that. He knows when we're not sincere. He knows when we're the hypocrite. We need to change. But there's something good about that, too. I don't always like to put that on the negative side. You know, he knows all the bad stuff because he knows all the good stuff, too. And doesn't the Bible say that you can't give a cup of water in his name and it not go unrewarded? All right. So he knows all the good stuff. Sometimes we get to feeling like we talked about in our class today. I'm kind of like Elijah, you know. There's nobody but me. And God said, I got 7,000 others that haven't bowed the knee to Baal. There's other people that are good, sincere, working people, Christian people. You be one of them. But another thing he does in this is he makes a claim. He makes a claim that I'm the Son of God. Remember he said to Peter, then the sons are free, right? Then I'm free. Because I'm Lord of the temple, I'm Lord of Sabbath, and I'm the Lord of all creation, I don't have to pay. But what does Jesus do? Does he pay? Well, the text says he paid. He said he told him to go get the coin out of the fish's mouth, and he took the coin, and he says to Peter, this is for me and for you on this tax. So he paid anyway, even though he's free. Isn't that a great attitude to have? Listen, I say this all the time in lessons when I get close to this point, and I'm close to it, so I'm going to say it. Just because you have the right to do something doesn't mean you should do it. Jesus had the right not to pay the tax, but he said, I'm not going to do it because I'll be a stumbling block to other people if I do it. Now notice, people were mad at him for doing miracles and for all of his teaching. He said, I'm not going to stop that. I'm going to keep on doing that. Because it's right to do that. But when it comes to this thing that we're talking about, he says, even though I have the right not to do it, I'm going to do it because I don't want to put a stumbling block in front of you. I'm going to let this get in the way. Now, how does that match up with some other scriptures? Wasn't there a guy named the Apostle Paul who said, I have the right to eat meat that's offered in the temples, the idols? I have the right to eat it, but I won't eat it because it might be a stumbling block to other people. Oftentimes in the world of entertainment, in the world of opinion, even in the church, we have the right to do certain things, but we know in our hearts and in our conscience if we do it, it's going to cause a problem and division. It's going to be a stumbling block to somebody coming to Christ or growing in Christ. And he says, can't you give that up? Jesus didn't have to come to earth, but he said, I'm coming anyway. And I don't have to die, but I'm coming anyway. Did you know Jesus, why should he be baptized? He didn't have any sins. I'm being baptized anyway, right? As an example to you, in obedience to God, I'm going to be baptized. Jesus is our great example here, and he has that sacrificing spirit. It's sort of like Paul said in another place, I become all things to all men, that I might win some. May God give us grace and honor and love toward each other, an understanding of where other people are at, and to bend over backwards and go out of our way to not be a stumbling block to them. I'm not talking about compromise with truth. Jesus never did that. But he said, hey, in these things, I can make a little extra effort on your behalf. So this tells me this. This tells me that Jesus knew all things, that Jesus made a claim to be the Son of God in this miracle, and it tells me that Jesus cares. He cares enough to forgo his privilege that was rightly his. I know I was reading the story of when I was doing some research on this lesson. It was about 1946. You ever been out to New Mexico, Los Alamos? I know when we were out there many years ago, you could take a tour of that place, you know. When it was there, it didn't exist. I mean, when it first came into existence, in the eyes and the ears of the American public, I don't think the president even knew that at the beginning. You know, that's where they were doing all the research to build the first atom bomb. In 1946, after that initial stage was over, there was a man working there, working on fusion, working with radiation, things of that nature. And before those particles came together, at the very last moment, he was to flip a switch. And that was part of the experiment. And he had developed a custom. This wasn't protocol at all, but he had developed a custom of flipping that switch with a screwdriver. So can you imagine doing such an important thing as that and using a screwdriver just before those parts come together in meltdown or fusion? And guess what? The screwdriver slipped. That's a true story. It slipped. And the guys that were in the room, I think there were seven that were in the room besides him, they said the whole room kind of turned blue. And the guy that was there, he could have ducked and avoided the initial spray of radiation, but he stood his ground and covered it. And as they were taken into the hospital, he said, you guys, you're going to be all right. But for me, he said, it's over. 9 days he was dead. That's the type of sacrifice that we're talking about that Jesus made for us. Sacrifice. I'm going to the cross. I'm laying down my life so you'll be all right. I'll take the hit. That's what he did for us. If you've never given your life to Christ, I pray that you will give your life to Christ today. You cannot stand on your own two feet in Judgment Day, but you can stand with Christ in Judgment Day. So if you have not confessed him as the Son of God and been baptized into Christ for the remission of your sins, I pray that you will make that decision. If you want to come and talk to me later about it, I encourage you to have that conversation with me or with somebody that's here. Let us all do our best to live for God. If you need to come, come as we stand and as we sing.